Colombia is in the process of a very ambitious tax reform. Correct me if I'm wrong with the figures, but that would raise about approximately 22 trillion pesos, about $4.7 billion. You expect to get that money by increasing taxes to the wealthy, capital gains, fighting tax evasion, among other measures. What makes Colombia take this direction, and what would be the use for these new revenues?
How much time do I have?
At the beginning, 5 minutes, if you can. I'm going to put the...
No, let me, in the case of Colombia, let me start by saying that we have the dual challenge of fiscal adjustment. We have a fiscal rule, which was actually, we came second in Latin America after Chile, in the signing of fiscal rule that, you know, guarantees the long-term sustainability of public sector finances with adjustment for economic activity and the price of oil, the price of copper in the case of Chile. According to that rule, which had been suspended during the pandemic, but has started again next year, we have to make a significant fiscal adjustment, about 3 percentage points of GDP. Reduction of the public sector deficit. Now, but on top of that, there are the social demands, the major social demands that of the country that were reflected in the popular protest last year and in the elections. The president who won is pro social reform. So the mix of the two is that led us to promote this tax reform. Let me emphasize three elements. The first one is eliminating a lot of tax benefits for the higher income people, the personal income tax, but also lots of benefits for specific sectors in the business tax that we have, and a wealth tax. Colombia has a long tradition of a wealth tax, but we're again. Introducing a wealth tax on personal incomes, on personal wealth, let's say. The second is a windfall tax on oil and gas. As I presented in Colombian debates, whenever we had a coffee boom in the past, the coffee sector contributed in addition to the government. So I say now the boom is of our coal and gas, it's going to be oil and gas. Oil and coal exports of Colombia. Gas, we are only self-sufficient, they say. And so, therefore, those two sectors have to make a special contribution to finance social spending. And the third is reducing tax evasion, which is very high in Colombia. And it goes together with the with improving the tax administration. So those are the three benefits. In terms of revenues, we expect the windfall tax to be more important initially, but declining through time as we expect the oil and coal prices to fall. So the so it's basically 2023, and then the tax rates for oil and gas will decline. And at the same time, the other elements of the tax reform, which are also gradual. So, for example, the wealth tax. Basically, the evaluation of wealth, how the people estimate wealth for tax purposes, will be a gradual process. So that they will come gradually, together with elimination of some of the benefits, which are also gradual. So that will be more important. And then, of course, with improvements in tax administration, the tax benefits will start to decline. Now, or the tax evasion will start to decline. Since we are in an ICRIC meeting, emphasize some elements that Colombia supported in the Group of 24 statement. Actually, the statement there is was presented by Colombia, which actually is to improve the OECD agreement from last year, which in our view and the view of ICRIC also, since I was also the chair of ICRI until I became finance minister, the benefits for developing countries are minimal. So there has to be a new round of negotiations that will improve significantly the benefit for developing countries. At the same time that they make it the current system more easier to manage, because it's very complex for countries to adopt that system. The current system is very weak, and some of the countries that are implemented some of the policies, including the U.S., have adopted so many exceptions that the benefits are going to be very small. So for us, it's important to push new negotiations. That's what we stated in our report. You can say also, by the way, the other recommendations of ICRI, which are not here, could be adopted. For example, a tax agreement in the UN, which is a policy that we have been recommending in ICRI for a long time, can be as well as some regional agreements. So I hope to be able to push also, perhaps with the support of Chile, for a Latin American agreement on tax cooperation that they can make things better. I think I'd stop here.
That's great with the time, by the way. Under Secretary Sanreza, I would like to know Chile. Oh, I'm really sorry. I would like to know, Chile is following a similar path as Colombia. You are trying to do a very ambitious reform as well. Your plan is to change almost the whole tax structure. Wouldn't it be easier to change only two or three kind of taxes? That's the right path to do, to try to change the whole system?
Well, first of all, thank you very much for the invitation. For us, as well as in the case of Colombia, it is important to have a tax reform because we have a commitment for fiscal consolidation. So public spending depends on permanent income, not on current income. And if you have to face social demands for social policy, we need to increase permanent income for the state. And the way to do that is through a tax reform. So we have called the country for a tax and fiscal new deal. We have invited the communities, the experts, and all political sectors to agree for this tax and fiscal new deal, which is more permanent income through taxes and progressivity in the tax system, and fiscal consolidation. It's the responsible way to make that happen. Okay, and the tax reform faces things that are very relevant for the Chilean reality. We have a tax system which is regressive. The top 1% of the distribution pay less taxes with respect to their income than the whole distribution. And also, we have some issues in the tax system that make income from capital not very effective in terms of taxes. Okay, so we have a tax rate which is similar to OECD, but the effective tax rate over income from capital is very low with respect to OECD average. In fact, for example, undistributed profits in Chile don't pay taxes. So usually what companies does is to have undistributed profits to another society that belongs to the same company indefinitely. So undistributed profits don't pay actually taxes. So in that sense, the tax system doesn't tax income from capital. And the OECD has recommended or has said it is desirable to have a wealth tax if you have an income tax that doesn't actually is not very effective taxing income from capital. That's why we have developed and proposed a wealth tax in a sense that is complementary to the income tax. And it allows us to tax wealth transfers, to tax capital income, and to make the tax system more progressive. We are also doing a tax reform that includes the decreasing the evasion and avoidance in the tax system. Actually, this is the main source of income in the expectation of the tax reform. And also, we have a reform on the royalty from copper and corrective taxes, green taxes, and health taxes as well. So it's a reform that changes, I wouldn't say the whole structure of the tax system, but introduces some new elements that make the system more progressive and allow us to have enough revenues to fill the gap that we have with respect to OECD countries. At this moment, Chile has a 7.8% of the GDP gap in tax revenue with respect to OECD average. And Chile is a high-income country. So we need to be forward to fill that gap. And we are not introducing so many changes in instrument, not even increasing in so many taxes, but to make the system more efficient in collecting those taxes. We are having a lot of changes in the authority tax power to make that happen. And that is a big, all political parties are agree that we shouldn't have, it's part of the fairness of the tax system to have a lower evasion and avoidance. And so in that sense, we think we are confident we are making an effort to have a better authority. Also, we have the technology today and nowadays internationally to have tax authorities that could have records, registers, and many more things that we didn't have in the many years ago, half the century ago, as in the case of Europe. So we think we could do better on that as well.
Thank you very much. It's very interesting talk about the permanent, a system that is going to be permanent in the future for your income. So now I would like to talk with Professor Stiglitz. As co-chair of ICRIC, we were talking about permanent taxes, but you are trying now to convince governments to approve emergency taxes that help countries to face this moment, this difficult moment, and to help the most vulnerable. First of all, I would like to have your opinion about these two tax reforms, and then I would like you to explain something about these emergency taxes that you think we need right now. Thank you.
Oh, thank you. Which button do I? Okay. Well, thank you. Well, first, let me say that I think both Colombia and Chile are moving in the right direction. I think they are really important tax reforms. Let me talk a little bit about the context that we're in. For the last quarter century, four decades, the public sector has been starved, and the resources that are available for the public sector to make really high return investments in education, infrastructure, technology, there haven't been the resources. So there is this long-term starving of the public sector, not just in developing countries, but in developed countries. And, you know, when I was chairman of the Council of Economic Advisors, we looked at the returns to further investment, particularly, say, in technology, and they were very, very high. So that's the first thing. And the second thing is that the tax structures that we have today are not progressive and in some countries actually regressive. As mentioned, at the top, they pay a lower percentage, and it's not only true in Chile, it's true in the United States, it's true in many countries. And this causes a lot of societal harm, I think, resentment. It undermines, I think, our democracy, our social solidarity, and it gives rise to demagogues. So that's the broad picture. Now, right now, we all know we're in a crisis of multiple, the pandemic, followed by the cost of living, the high oil prices, high food prices. Presents both, you know, enormous stresses on our society, debt crises in many, many countries, but also huge distribution crises within the countries. So it's both a problem of the country as a whole, but also major redistributions. You take a country like the United States, where we are neither an energy exporter or importer. We're roughly, the oil companies have made off like bandits. At the same time, consumers are paying enormous price increases, enormous stress. Norway is an energy exporter, and things are even worse there in the sense that the country as a whole is doing better, but consumers are facing even higher increases in their electricity bills, and really unsustainable. So that highlights that we need to do something. Something is not working. What I worry about for developing countries and emerging markets, when they go to international organizations like the IMF, the World Bank, the old recipes will be imposed, austerity. And we know what that will do, that will lower growth. I mean, recently, the IMF has been much better than it has, so I don't want to castigate the IMF from past mistakes, but and I think they've learned that, you know, modern macroeconomics says that when you have a major economic downturn, you need to stimulate the economy. Those findings are have been strengthened by what we saw in both 2008 crisis and in the pandemic. But for emerging markets and developing countries, if they're going to have the ability to have the stimulus, particularly countries like Colombia and Chile that have a fiscal rule, but in general, you know, it's very hard for them to borrow. It's very important for them to have more fiscal space. And the major way you can get fiscal space is more progressive taxation. The wealth tax making sure that the multinationals actually get taxed, and windfall profits taxes. Let me make something very clear from an economic perspective. Profits taxes are taxes on profits. I mean, that sounds obvious, but almost all countries allow deductions of all expenses, labor and capital. Capital is either deducted at the beginning, which many countries do, but over time through depreciation allowances. So a profits tax, corporate income profits tax, is non-distortionary. It does not adversely affect investment, does not adversely affect employment. And, you know, there's some details that may matter, what allowances you have for losses. I don't want to, you know, these are very complex. But 49 years ago, I wrote an article trying to explain all this and to explain that they do not reduce corporate profits tax, if it's properly designed, does not reduce investment. Now, there is one aspect where developing countries and emerging markets can suffer, and that is the race to the bottom in trying to attract capital. And that's where the OECD initiative of a minimum tax is a move in the right direction, and some countries like the United States have unilaterally imposed it. Not the optimal design necessarily, but they have imposed it. But now let me share with you some of ICRIC's views on the OECD reforms. Our view on the minimum tax is it's much too low. It should be 25, not 15. And the reason is, if you remember, one of the reasons many of us got engaged in this was that it was very clear that developing countries and emerging markets needed more revenue. And many of the countries have taxes at rates of 25% or more. What we're afraid of, and there's some evidence of this, that 15% will be where everybody will center around, and that will lower the tax revenue that you get from corporations. So rather than helping things, it could hurt things. That's just one example of where the OECD went wrong. The other part, pillar one, which is the allocation of what I call tax rights, really reflects the problem that Jose Antonio referred to. This was an agreement done mostly by the advanced countries. You know, it's called the inclusive framework. Everybody was around the table, but most of the people had their microphones permanently turned off. And so they could sit there and enjoy hearing other people, but the framework was really set by the developed countries. And when you look at where the revenues are going, how much extra revenues are going to be going to developing countries, it's not very much. And there are a lot of details. Jose Antonio mentioned the carve-outs. The bottom line is that agreement was not an agreement that if everybody's voices were there, it would not be the agreement. And that's why there's a feeling in ICRIC that the governance of tax reform ought to be moved to, or ought to be reformed, and reformed in a way that gives a voice to all the countries. And we have two international organizations that are designed to do that, the UN and the IMF. And, that's where countries are represented. The OECD was created, I mean, I don't want to criticize it. I've been very active in the OECD, but it was created as a club of the advanced countries. And, you know, it's brought others in, but not, if you look at the outcome, you would say, what I said before, their microphones were turned off. So it's a step forward, but it's not enough of a step forward.
I think Oxfam thinks to, I'm sorry, Gabriela Butcher. I think Oxfam thinks that some of these proposals, like the OECD, are being insufficient, and the response, the government's response of the pandemic, has been insufficient too, and the poverty in the world has increased. So, what would be the response, in your opinion, at this moment?
Thank you, and I'd like to start by saying it's so important that we're here today having this dialogue about wealth taxation and taxation in general, and here at the IMF
It's long overdue and really important that we do this. And it's so good to hear committed governments such as Chile and Colombia speaking about their intentions to really reform the tax system and to invite others, as Minister Ocampo was saying, across Latin America. And I do hope that beyond, we start talking about this as a real alternative, a possibility for raising resources that are very needed. And we know that inequality is really at the root of many of the problems of the world, and many of the problems of the world that we are seeing are compounded by inequality that is at the moment at such extreme levels. And we heard it, many of us outside today in the protesters on the streets, really speaking about the issues with debt, climate, everything that is really threatening people's lives across the world. So this is about wealth distribution and differences in terms of wealth and poverty, but it's also very much about who gets healthcare. And you were saying public services have been starved. So what does that mean? It means very different life expectancies, 10-year difference between one block and another in extremely unequal cities and, of course, in countries as well. So it gets to decide who lives and who doesn't and who gets education and who doesn't and who has social protection, land, food, and also a voice. This issue of the microphones that are not there at the big tables is also something that is happening across the world in terms of who gets to decide and who gets to be at the table in terms of what is important. So this extreme inequality is also the systemic accumulation not only of wealth but also of power. And that power of the 1% that is has been so systematically accumulated is done also by the denial of the power for the others. And there's no surprise that wealth taxation is not spoken about so much because it's, in fact, not an issue that is so much in the interest of those who are in the interest of maintaining a status quo of some privilege that has been acquired over time. So we see that today the effects of inequality are multiplied, not only with the pandemic, of course, the war in Ukraine and the cost of living crisis. And they're really fueling a very extreme situation. Some months ago, Oxfam produced a report called Inequality Kills and showing how there's a correlation between extreme inequality and, as I was saying earlier, how many people actually get to live or die. And in Latin America, the pandemic hit harder than any other region in the world, both in terms of per capita deaths and also in economic contraction. And Latin America was already the most unequal region in the world before the virus struck. So there is some clue in what happened. And recently, the World Bank has said that the long-standing goal of ending extreme poverty by 2030 is unlikely to be met. And if we factor this worsening inequality, millions more people will be forced into extreme poverty just this year. And Latin America, unfortunately, has seen the reversal of the trend where gradually, there was poverty reduction and greater equality, which started 20 years ago. That, unfortunately, is no longer the case. So what we have seen is an explosion of record-breaking increases in the numbers and wealth of the richest people. So we have 573 people who became new billionaires during the pandemic at a rate of one every 30 hours during the 2 years of the pandemic. And in Latin America, one every month. And so we see this with enormous concern, and with our partners, Development Finance International, we published this week our commitment to reducing inequality index, which shows that the majority of governments actually added fuel to this already critical state of inequality. And instead of adopting policies that would have reduced and responded to people's needs, in the majority of cases, they didn't do much in that respect. So there's, 85% of governments decided not to increase tax on the riches during the pandemic, and 11 actually reduced them during that time, therefore giving themselves less resources to respond. And at the same time, half of low- and middle-income countries reduced their share of health spending with the consequences in the middle of a pandemic. So our CRI also shows that inequality is definitely a policy choice, and it doesn't have to be that way. And there's some countries in our index that show another direction, like Nepal, that increased, doubled their spending on health, or Costa Rica and New Zealand that increased taxation from those that have the highest income brackets. So we think it's definitely a time to look at redistributing, because we have such extremes that are at the moment without caps or reins, and we need to see how they are put at the service of saving lives in the immediate, because we have a crisis in terms of hundreds of millions in extreme hunger at the moment, and in all sorts of situations, even in rich countries. And how we see that money being invested to reduce inequality and investing it in universal healthcare, in education, social protection, and also ensuring that the lives of women are transformed, because there's also a very big gender dimension in this inequality, and the accumulation of wealth has a more of a male face, and the poverty is more of a female face. But we want to go further and think, how can we design a system that is different? We don't have to be correcting after the event, but rather think of how it is fairer in the first place. And that perhaps in Latin America we can be proud of societies that are looking out for everybody, and that we're not missing out on the talents of people who are completely not able to develop because of the lack of opportunity and the lack of basic access to services, which is the case at the moment. So, and the fact that they have no voice because of all these compounding inequalities is something that also needs to change. So we hope that with this process we start creating jointly a society that is for everybody, and a much more democratic society, as Professor Stiglitz was saying. This is the path to doing that, to hearing everybody's voice and to really creating together. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Gabriela. So, Ilan Goldfan, I know that there have been a lot of opinions right on the table. I would like to know first, what do you think, what the IMF think about these two brave fiscal reforms? What do you think about the way they are trying to change the structure, the tax structure, to get more revenues? They are compromised. They also, both of them told they are compromised with fiscal consolidation. I know that's something that worries you. So I would like to know, first of all, about these two tax reforms. And do you think, like Professor Stiglitz, that they are going in the right direction? And I would like to know also about what Gabriela talked about, the increase of poverty in the region. Is this kind of measures the way to fight against this poverty? Thank you.
First, I would like to thank everybody to be in person finally, and also finally debating these issues, which are very good. So we have here Gabriela, Claudia, Minister Ocampo, Professor Stiglitz, Patricia moderating. I'm very happy to be here with all of you. I will try to describe a little bit the view we have on this. But before I do, let me just answer directly your question. Yes, we do think these reforms are in the right direction, in the direction we believe. And why is that? We are now under the third shock. We had the pandemic. We had the Russian invasion of Ukraine, all very serious in terms of hitting the population, poverty, inequalities. And now we are starting to have the third shock, from the point of view of the developing economy, which is tightening of financial conditions that will probably decelerate the economies and will have an impact. So pretty important. But before we had these shocks, we had pre-existing challenges. I mean, in Latin America, we are talking about lost decades for quite some time, so basically because there's no growth. We also know that we have debt issues, public finances, and if you don't have the finance, how can you finance good services? How can you provide services if you don't have the resources? And finally, the third one is economic inequalities, disparities. And not surprisingly, you need to find a solution for the three of them. And we don't have time, as in the past, to say, well, let's just grow and then think about inequalities, or let's just, I mean, we will have to deal with them simultaneously. We will have to have inclusive reforms, fiscal reform, like these tax reforms, that we, at the same time, they bring more revenues so that they can provide more services or more resources to where the societies are asking. It is no coincidence we're talking about here, Chile and Colombia, that we heard the societies talking very loudly in both cases, democratically, for elections, also on the streets. They're asking that. So if we want to be sustainable, and we think about sustainable in terms of fiscal, but we need to be social sustainable at the same time. So both of them have to occur at the same time. Let me tell you how are our status facts in terms of revenues, because at the end of the day, the title here is about taxation, and those are through tax reforms. So where are we in terms of revenue mobilization? And just to give a general principle, why do we need revenue mobilization? Because you need to secure sufficient resources to provide social support to the most vulnerable, especially now we've got a shock of energy and food, so you need to protect the most vulnerable. But you need to provide public goods to do what you need to do. And the pandemic, and I think Gabriela mentioned the pandemic, it was a case where in Latin America we saw that there was lack of public services in a very explicit way. And it became clear that we do need to provide this public good. So revenue mobilization is very important. How are we doing in terms of revenue mobilization in the region? Where the money is coming? Three, value-added tax, corporate tax, and personal income tax. Value-added tax is by far the largest way to mobilize. Then you have corporate income tax, where you have quite a bit of exemptions and loopholes, and that needs to, when you have a reform, you have to look at it. Second, the issue of the global minimum tax and the race to the bottom that Professor Stiglitz, that's very, very important. And I'm not going to talk more about corporate tax because I'm a decided Professor Stiglitz who has written quite a bit on that, so I will let you know. But in general, the region has corporate income tax, quite a bit of exemptions, loopholes, and the risks of race to the bottom, which means give exemptions and exemptions because you want to attract a corporation. And finally, personal income tax. And this is where the revenues compared to OECD are very different. Just to give you the numbers, we have in personal income tax 10% of total revenues compared to 25% in OECD. Why? First, informality. So the region, if it's not one of the worst in informality, is there with other poor. So informality, you cannot get personal income. But in addition to that, you do have other issues. First, high thresholds, which means that sometimes to really pay, the high rates are really, really high. So only few rich people end up paying. Tax are in generally low and increase very slowly for income level. So not really progressive in some sense. And finally, there are a lot of deductions. And you may think, well, you have the deduction, that's good because you will look at the vulnerable. But at the end of the day, the deductions, who benefits is who knows how to. So those are the issues where we actually are not getting the money from the revenues from the personal income tax. And the reforms we are hearing here have made some proposals in each of the measures I mentioned. And finally, one thing that we are not talking here is about revenues that are more related to health, to the environment, that are issues that if you're going to tax, we do want it to have another objective, which is direct this, the economy to a more healthy and more environmental friendly. So those are things that are in these reforms that are, it's clearly the objective that we're looking. So let me just conclude that, in general, that we must recognize the public's frustration with inequality, especially after the pandemic and with deflation rising. There's, we need to recognize there's widespread distrust in government policies in the region. For this, we need that policymakers design tax policies that improve the progressivity of the tax system and protect the poor while fostering productivity growth and ensuring fiscal sustainability. You don't need to have fiscal responsibility to be able to do this. Such plans should be properly and carefully communicated to the public. Moreover, in countries where the perception and confidence that taxes are well spent is low, tax reform will need to be accompanied with improvements in the quality and composition of public expenditure. So we should cannot forget expenditure part. Even though we are talking about tax reform, the expenditure side is very important. So, as I said in the middle, tax reform can only work if they are socially and politically sustainable. Thank you.
You spoke about a term called inclusive reforms. Inclusive for whom, exactly, at this moment?
Inclusive means more progressive, better in terms of income distribution on one side. On the other side, look at poverty and the most vulnerable. Those are the ones that you should target. So, for example, in the reaction to these shocks that we have, now the energy shock, we have seen a lot of actions by government, the more targeted to the ones they need, the better.
To Minister Campo, so if you want to rebuttal some of the words that he's been saying till this moment, but also I would like to ask you about the idea that I think it was you or one of you talk about the idea of an alliance in Latin America about taxes. It would be a good idea to have an alliance to try to defend the extent these fiscal policies in the region.
Well, I was really talking about a tax agreement, a strong regional tax agreement along, you know, developing principles similar to those of the OECD inclusive framework. I mean, one problem that in this world all countries have is that tax avoidance, not to say tax evasion, may be associated to international flows, the capacity that any tax earner has to to move the headquarters of his business or his residence in order to pay lower taxes or no taxes. So that's a major problem, and certainly in this region. I mean, Colombia, for example, has problems with at least one of its neighbors, but also the Caribbean, the many Caribbean places which are tax havens, and how to manage that is important. But even, I must say, even moving people who move to Florida, in the case of Colombia, is a major source of problems. Both in the U.S. and Colombia, we now have a system of global income, which is good, let's say. But I'm not totally sure that we're able, even under that system, to avoid some levels of tax avoidance. Anyway, by the way, what the Vice Minister of Chile mentioned is quite, quite important, because aside from, I think, the opportunities of the new technologies of the data technology, let's say, to try to track where people are making their income, is actually a significant advance. For example, this year in Colombia, for the first time, all taxpayers got a preliminary tax bill from the government. So we got everyone said, "But this was your incomes last year." So we had to, of course, take that into account in our tax return, because that's the information that the tax administration has, which is arbitrary. And for example, a system in which all payments are digital, which is, of course, most payments are digital, is also a movement in the right direction, because that will allow the tax administration also, among all reasons to, first of all, it may be easier for people to use, just Brazil, for example, is well advanced, probably the most advanced in Latin America in that regard. But for the tax administration, it's also a great benefit to have information of who is moving money, let's say, for making payments. So all those things are also a possibility of improving information that tax administrations have. So I think, moving into a regional agreement, supporting, in a sense, the OECD negotiations or eventual UN negotiations, I think it will be a significant improvement. That's a point, by the way, that ICRIC has emphasized in the past, and as I was also part of ICRIC. I continue to be part of ICRIC, actually. I have not resigned. I am not the chair anymore. The Joe is now one of the co-chairs. But that's a point that we have emphasized quite a bit. By the way, also the wealth tax indirectly, although the ICRIC is more about corporate income, certainly the wealth tax, and perhaps ICRIC should move into personal income and wealth taxes a bit more.
Talking about
that Oxfam has done a good job.
I'm sorry. No, I was saying about the agreement about the your president, President Boric, has been calling for this kind of agreement to avoid tax havens, It's a hard moment for this kind of agreement in a moment that maybe governments are trying to compete to lessen their taxes in a way to get more revenues. Do you think it would be easy to try to find an agreement like this in the region?
I think it is always a challenge to make an agreement that changes the status quo. but we have to make the effort to make the agreement. We have to work on that. And I think it's a moment to do it today. There are a lot of incentives to actually compete with the tax systems, and that could be very bad for our countries as well. So we have to put in the balance the benefits and costs of this agreement today. Agreement means to make an effort for our tax authorities, for our tax system, to respect some of the main issues, which in our region are the ones Ian told us. No? We need inclusive growth. We need societies with less inequality, with more social cohesion, and that is not free. Yeah? We have to invest on that kind of society, and to make that the tax systems are very relevant. So I think it's a moment to make that effort. The possibility of the coordination is now before We try to compete with the tax system. And we need tax cooperation and coordination. We have the technologies nowadays, as Minister Ocampo said. We can modernize, actually, our tax authorities. We have been doing that in Chile as well, and improving also the revenues through diminishing informality, for example, in our societies. We can share experiences, good experiences. In many of our countries have developed some incentives that are working to reduce informality, for example, which is also something we care about in the Chilean tax reform. I would like to also finish with this idea that inclusivity in growth means also to recognize that $1 or $1 spent in the poorer is more relevant in terms of welfare than $1 invest in the richest. And that's why we need a focus on our vulnerable people. that means recognizing inclusivity in the growth. And finally, in the Chilean case, the data that Ian also told us about is a structure of the tax system that is very particular to Latin America. In Chile, it's even maybe worse. Personal income tax is very low in the tax structure. That's why we also are focusing on that in the reform, as well as tax avoidance. Okay, and we have actually we have a big threshold. I mean, we have a lot of people, low income people in general, that are not paying actually income tax. But we also have a tax rate, marginal tax that could improve in terms of progressivity. So actually, the reform in terms of the income taxes from labor are a focus on the 3% of the people with most more income, okay, and deductions. Deductions is a very important issue in Chile. We had a big panel of experts a couple of years ago. And there was like a very broad agreement to reduce these deductions. However, it's difficult to make that. There are, for some reason, they are there. And so if something could help us as well in that, is to have this principle. What are the principles for deductions? I think some countries have developed. I think the IMF could also maybe have some principles to organize and these deductions, and we can advance on that as well in the region, I think.
Professor Stiglitz, are the countries doing enough to finish with these deductions that are a problem to get more revenues, the whole deductions that more companies have, and at the end they don't pay enough taxes? Do you think he's been doing enough about this?
No, they haven't. But this is a global problem, not only developing and emerging markets. It was an issue I struggled with in the United States when I was chairman of the Council of Economic Advisors. It was, the answer why is pretty clear. You talk about deductions of interest on homes, the real estate sector and the finance sector. You have two important sectors who like these because they encourage people to buy bigger homes. The real estate loves that. And finance sector wants people to finance it by debt. They like that. Bad for the, both of them are probably bad for the economy at some point. I mean, we saw in 2008, they really had pushed debt finance way too far. So we sort of understand why it's so difficult. One of the arguments that we made is that actually, if you broaden the base, you can get the same revenue at a lower rate. And here's where I had a proposal, never got very far, which was actually there are big advantages for low income, for collecting the revenue from what ordinary individuals through the VAT. It's sort of like a flat rate on everybody. And it can have even some degree of progressivity if you have an exemption for food. In most countries, the complexity of the tax system is such that it is so much easier to collect it through a VAT than to have people have to fill out tax forms. And that's the advantage. I was arguing that actually the threshold should be very high, and the bottom part actually collected de facto through the VAT, and the income tax should be then reserved for the upper half of the population. Now, that particular view, I think, can be changed, and I was doing this before the arrival of digitalization. What Colombia is doing is what I think most countries who have the capacity should be doing, which is sending people a bill, giving them a chance to say, is this right or wrong, not imposing huge administrative costs. The interesting thing is that there was a move in the United States, and who opposed it? Intuit, which is the owner of TurboTax, and H.R. Block. So they like the privatization of suffering. They like the fact that everybody in our country in the United States has to pay large amounts of money to have their taxes paid. And that really undermines support for public services. I mean, it's sort of a double insult. You have to pay in order to pay your taxes. And that, to me, seems a wrong framework. So I think one of the things that the IMF should encourage is for those countries to have the capacity, have the kind of thing that Colombia is moving towards, where you get a tax bill, and that would have a double benefit, because I think the digitalization of government can help in transparency. It can increase the efficiency and confidence in the public sector. So if you can move, for those countries that can move in that, they should be moving rapidly.
The windfall profit taxes is an initiative that you defend, and I think in these meetings this week in Washington, it's been discussing a lot about how we can get more revenues, and the windfall taxes are in the conversation all the time. So I don't know if you have convinced most people here in this week about the windfall taxes.
Well, I've been working a long time to try to convince, for instance, the U.S. administration. I have to admit, failure so far. Let me begin by, again, talking a little bit about the context. We have these high prices, oil, food. inflation. The Fed's raising the interest rates is not going to solve the problem. We should be clear about that. It's not going to create more food. It's not going to create more oil. It will create more problems for the developing countries. It's an example of what I call the 21st century version of beggar thy neighbor policies, because we raise interest rates to reduce inflation here. It increases the exchange rate in other countries. It means they face more inflationary pressure, and it creates a debt crisis. And so these external effects of U.S. monetary policies remind me a little bit of what happened in the 1980s, where we had the debt crisis, Latin American debt crisis, caused by Volcker's raising the interest rates. He was warned by one of the members of his board that that would cause a global, a Latin American financial crisis, you know, given the high level of debt. And we've been through 14 years of close to zero interest rates, so not a surprise that there's a high level of debt, both at the corporate, household, and country level. And he says, that's not my problem. My mandate is U.S. economy. And there is that kind of provinciality, you might say. In a world globalization, that has serious problems. So I think what we are going to be seeing is these high interest rates are going to have a very limited effect on inflation. I've done an analysis of the extent to which inflation in the U.S. is caused by demand. Aggregate demand, real aggregate demand, is actually below trend, contrary to a few people who argue that all that government spending in the pandemic is the source of the inflation. Overwhelming evidence that is wrong. And it's a supply side disturbance, relative sectors. But that the answer is fiscal measures. More investment in energy, like green energy, which is, again, one of the topics that's being discussed. More investment in agriculture, rural roads, so that people can get their goods to market. So there are lots of things you could do on the supply side that are going to be effective in dealing with inflation. But the large changes in relative prices that we're seeing, oil, food, give rise to huge windfall profits taxes. And I mentioned in my previous comments that a well-designed corporate profits tax does not discourage investment, employment. It's non-distortionary. And that's even more true for windfall profits taxes. And windfall profits taxes are easy to design. The statement that works very hard, how do you know what is a windfall? That's wrong. We know how much prices are above normal levels, and so we can talk about, you know, there are ways, different thresholds you can have, but we know how to design a windfall profits tax that really does capture windfall profits. And those revenues, as all of us have been talking about, are absolutely essential for addressing the multiple crises that you talked about, that we talked about before, and there's really no alternative in my mind. It is the lowest hanging fruits. It has a lot of money, unfortunately, because large changes in relative prices are stressful for the economy. We don't have as resilient economy as we had hoped, and therefore the stresses are greater than we hoped. And finally, let me just say one of the ironies of all this is that because we underinvested in resilience, price increases are even higher than they would have been if we had a more resilient sector. And so some of the sectors that did not invest in resilience, more capacity, are benefiting even more from the crisis. So they, you know, they're being rewarded for their failure to be resilient. Finally, the evidence is also very strong in the United States. I haven't looked at it in other countries, that there are huge increases in margins, And at least some of this is due to market power, oligopoly. There's been a growth of oligopolies, monopoly power. We know it in digital sectors, but we know it in many other sectors of the economy. And so there's even a more compelling case for the windfall profits tax, because some of it is the exercise of market power.
I'm really sorry. I think we are running out of time. So just if you, some of you have a question, some of the audience, it should be formulated from one of these two microphones, because we need the microphone to the questions. But only I know that Gabriela and Ilan didn't talk again. So if someone wants to make a question for them, that would be great. If you don't, I have.
All right, from my point of view, they can ask questions to anybody.
Sorry, can I ask a question?
Can you go to one of the microphones?
Ready. Good morning, everyone. Dr. Stiglitz, it's a pleasure to address you, sir, really. I grew up in Colombia half of my life, and also the other half here in the U.S. It's not actually a question. It's to see your views on how on the need of educating the population, the citizens, to understand the policies that they're being imposed to. Meaning, you know, we can talk about macro, micro policies, but the common citizen do not understand that. So what is your view on how to do better in making it simple, a simple language so individuals can understand and not have reactions like we've seen in Colombia lately? Thank you.
Oh, yeah, very, very brief answer, which is this is something that all of our institutions have to work on. I mean, you know, the internet multilateral institutions, academia needs to play an important role. I think civil society, institutions like Oxfam, play a very important role. You know, the report that she mentioned about inequality kills, that title conveys a lot. And, you know, there are statistics that support it, but that simple message, I think, is one that people ought to understand and can understand. And the pandemic, one more thing maybe I'll say, which is, one always needs to use teaching moments. The pandemic was a teaching moment where we got to see clearly the evidence of inequality. People understood it. They were focused on it. And, you know, as teachers, we always try to think about, you know, examples that bring things home. And as when there are these teaching moments, the financial crisis, we have to take advantage of those to try to convey as much as we can about what is going on.
Sorry, Gabriela.
Yes, thank you. I just wanted to ask actually a question of Mr. Goldstein, because I heard you speaking about different taxes, VAT, corporate, and also personal income tax, and the issue that, you know, Latin America has such large informal sector. But I'd like to hear from you on your views on wealth taxation, because that's some of the interesting new elements of the reforms in Chile and Colombia. And a second question is around, so we heard the IMF, for example, criticizing the UK government's proposals to reduce high-income bracket taxes and, you know, saying literally this will increase inequality, and we agree, and, you know, that's a statement that is important. So I'd like to hear how this relates to the country-level work, because our partners and ourselves, we see that the majority of loans and 87% of loans that were made during the pandemic actually include austerity measures, which are contrary to these views of reducing inequality. So how does this rhetoric and these ideas really channel into country-level work that impacts people's lives?
So my view is different regarding your assumption. Your assumption that fighting inequalities and have fixed responsibility cannot be together. And I think they need to be. And the way to do it, I mean, that we just have tax reforms that are progressive. On the expenditure side, you need to focus in the most vulnerable. So we need to be able to talk the same language. So instead of talking austerity, we say you need to be able to finance it. You need to be able to have fiscal responsibility. At the same time, yet you look for inclusiveness. You asked me about wealth tax. There are several ways, several types of wealth. Some work better than others. Property taxes, inheritance tax, maybe those are have a better, more efficient way of actually getting revenue mobilization. The issue with wealth is not an issue in principle. It's more an issue in practice. Are you able to get the revenues you want to because of all this avoidance that we talk about or the capacity to move? So it's not a principle issue. It's a matter of how do you actually get the revenues. And the amount of revenues you get is very important to be able to do what you want to do. So if you don't get the revenues, it will be very difficult to spend it.
Can I just say one thing about why I think a wealth tax is a good idea, which really echoes what the minister from Chile said, which, and it complements what you said about implementation. Unfortunately, all of our income taxes are imperfect. There's a lot of that escapes. And all of our inheritance taxes, many countries don't have inheritance taxes, but even those that do, they're imperfect. And a lot of money escapes. And a wealth tax that is directed at the very top, at the very rich, is a way of supplementing these other taxes, capturing money that would has otherwise escaped. You know, 0.5%, 1%, 1.5% is not going to get rise at people at the very top. It's not going to give rise to a lot of distortions. It's a limited number of people, actually. You can identify the number of people. Much of their wealth is in financial wealth, in property, in identifiable assets. Some of it you're not going to get. It's not going to be perfect. But you have to think of this as two imperfects is better than one. And you look at it systemically.
Yeah. May I?
Can I just... I know we're out of time, but I just want to double-hand it very
hard. They told me I have to finish, but...
May I ask a last question, sir?
Just to complement this, a lot of our tax view is how imperfect they are and how we... But one thing you mentioned I think is very important. Digitalization will make things much easier. And I think we are going in that direction because the capacity to evade will disappear as fast as digitalization can come. That's all.
Last question, may I ask?
Let me just underscore one issue that actually, first of all, on the progressive character of the wealth tax, that's one point. But also to complement Joe's comments, the Colombia created the wealth tax in 1936. We had a wealth tax from 1936 to 1989 and several ones, actually, in the 21st century. So we have a long tradition. And when it was created, one of the reasons why it was created because they said that the income tax, capital income, is always underestimated. And therefore, the wealth tax is a complement. That was the historical origin of reason for the wealth tax.
All right, Mr. Goffman.
Thank you very much to everybody. I'm really sorry I didn't calculate the time well. So, but now we have to finish. Thank you, everybody, for being here. And
thank you.
Yeah. mejor, esperemos a ver qué salgan.
I'm going to be the